Seat, we will come to order. And thank you all. Let me gavel to order the Police Judicial and Legal Committee meeting for Monday, October the 3rd. It's good to see everybody here. It's nice to be in a community that was not severely damaged. I'd like to start this meeting with a short moment of silence for those who were lost in this storm. Could have well been us. Some of us, many of us in this room, have been through something similar. And if you are so inclined in your own heart, please give thanks for us being spared. Let's have a moment of silence, please. Thank you very much. I want to once again publicly thank our staff, Eric, your whole team. And we have many of our department heads here. They were working round the clock, did a great job. They always prepare as if we're going to get the worst case scenario. They never lightly prepare and hope for the best. They prepare for the worst. And then when we get the best, which we got, it's a real blessing. So we're very fortunate to have come through that the way we did. Item number 2 on our agenda is approval of the minutes.
Move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and as I always ask, Mr. Chapman, no scrivener's errors this time.
Not this time.
All right, you are the master of finding those. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, the minutes are approved. Item 3 is public comments. If you have a public comment to make, please come forward to the lectern, give your name and address, and by ordinance, you have 2.5 minutes, please. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Sutherland. I live at 1493 Fort Palmetto Circle. We're in lovely Mount Pleasant.
Just a second. We've got to get your microphone turned on. Do we have the timer?
No. Oh, there we go.
He's got it. Okay.
Do I need to repeat?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning. I am Debbie Sutherland. I live at 1493 Fort Palmetto Circle here in lovely Mount Pleasant. And I am here not only as a private citizen, but also as the chairman of the Mount Pleasant Historical Commission. And I would like to make a couple of comments regarding B under legal matters on today's agenda. The first point that I would like to make is in regards to the Memorial Waterfront Park. Back in 2006, there was a committee that was formed to study the Memorial Waterfront Park development, and they worked for the better part of a year and did absolutely fantastic work. And I'm very glad to have met General Tant, who was the chairman. He is here today. From my experience, they really did a great job. It was a very inclusive, very comprehensive study. And they came up with the idea that they would devote the Memorial Waterfront Park to commemorating people who lost their lives during wartime conflicts in the United States that lived here in Mount Pleasant. I firmly believe that that should continue. We should honor the work that all those folks did and make sure that that Memorial Waterfront Park remains a war memorial. The second point I would like to make is addressing the process. As chairman of the Mount Pleasant Historical Commission, we have a very narrow scope where we deal with signage, but we have jurisdiction over location, appropriateness, verbiage for the entire city, town of Mount Pleasant. What we do not have any jurisdiction over would be memorials, statuary, any other type of structures that are proposed. And I think there is a pretty clean and quick fix for that, that verbiage just be added to the ordinance that governs the operation of the Mount Pleasant Historical Commission. So those are the two points I want to make. I believe that we should keep the Memorial Waterfront Park as it is, focused on a war memorial, and secondly, formalize the process through legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning, and thank you to the police department for their wonderful protection that they give us. I'm Louisa Montgomery, 404 Church Street, corner of Church and Hibben. And I'm here, I'm sure you know, to speak about the noise ordinance I have written you. I'm afraid one of my emails got sidetracked by the storm, but perhaps one did get through. I'm concerned about the property owner's rights as opposed to the business owner's rights. It all comes down to one main point. The homes were there before the businesses. We have got to protect the integrity and the value of these homeowners by keeping the decibels to a reasonable. And when I say reasonable, there are studies, national studies, that call for certain decibels. And if they have lower ones, why can't we? For heaven's sakes. Yesterday I was on the computer and the Confederate Home and College on Broad Street, states clearly, no amplified music. Well, if they can say it, why can't we? Thank you so much.
Next, please.
I'm hysterical, too. I'm chairman of the other hysterical department.
Mr. Mayor, council members, I would like to make a strong case for what I feel very passionate about, and that is to keep the Mount Pleasant Memorial Waterfront Park a local park, because it truly has no national significance, but it speaks to who we are in Mount Pleasant in the former Christ Church Parish, and I'd like to do that at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Would you give your name and address, please?
My name is Hugh B. Tant III, retired Brigadier General, U.S. Army, address 1508 Twilight Trail, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina.
And General, you headed the commission that established the park, I believe, and in the design.
That's true.
Thank you very much. We'll be talking to you during that agenda item.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Next, please.
Good morning. My name is Nicholas Christ. I live at 725 Coleman Boulevard, lifetime resident in Charleston. Several years ago, I frequently transited between downtown and Charleston, and often noticed off to the left as you enter downtown that the area off to the left is a bit of an eyesore. There's some grass there, remnants of the Ravenel Bridge. So one day I was walking into the area, and I'm sort of a creative type, and visualized an area there that could serve the community. And in my mind, I visualized an area that maybe had a dog park, a splash park, a fitness area, sort of an extension of the existing park that's for the children that's already there. So I spoke with Jake and also Mr. Santos, and we sort of kicked around some ideas, and a friend of mine and a landscape architect put together a sort of a semi-formal proposal of what it could potentially look like. I know that this has been in talks for several years, but I just want to let you know that we're still here and supporting that idea. And that I just feel like Mount Pleasant deserves a beautiful entrance. And there's certainly a place for the War Memorial and First Responders area. I think that this area has enough space there to conserve the entire community, from children all the way to adults and those that have deceased. And I just want to pledge my support that we still support the town. Thank you.
Next, please. Please hand them to the clerk.
All right. Hi, my name is Shannon Carter. I'm at 334 Hook Lane. Thank you for your time and efforts on working on this proposed ordinance. As you know, I've been here several of the meetings to kind of go over issues that I've been dealing with. And the one I want to focus on mostly is around amplified sound, amplified music, because I believe that is a different dynamic than other general noise. And I use times past, I've kind of shown this other map and played some of the videos. But as you can see here, in terms of the issue I'm dealing with, where the location of the live music is the red dot, where I live there is the blue, and at 60 decibels, when live music is played, can always be heard throughout my house at all times, much less going out into my backyard or anywhere else into my front yard. And as you can see here, as of yesterday, measured it again, videotaped it, where the purple is, music at 60 decibels could be heard down the street, all through all impacting all these houses. And with a yellow dot just recently, a couple weeks ago, the bass from there could be heard from the location where it's always playing live music all the way down to where the yellow dot is. Previously, there was a provision in one of the ordinances around special events that it only allowed a limited number of amplified music, amplified sound. I urge you to go back and to reinstate that because the dynamics around amplified sound, I believe, are a lot different than a lot of the other things that we are focused on in terms of some of the noise ordinance. And this is just yesterday, and I've, since this has only occurred yesterday, wasn't able to get this sent in, but I just... This is what my back porch sounds like all the time. And that ranged from 55 to 62 decibels. Okay. And then 58 to 62 decibels. And imagine never getting away from this at any time. So I just urge you to limiting music like that to
Thank
special
you.
Events or lower decibels.
Thank you. Next.
Good morning. My name is Gail Smither. I live at 419 Baby Drive. When back in May, the decision to go with a trial noise ordinance was to try to strike a balance between homeowners and businesses. Balance being what can each live with. And for me, balance means give or take here or there. I've heard discussions about, and this gentleman just spoke about, where you can hear it all the time. I've heard discussions where, imagine if you have a child's birthday party next door, you can hear it, it's above 60 decibels, you don't want to regulate that, a swimming pool next door, and that's fine. What I ask you to imagine, and much like this gentleman here, is from 1 o'clock on Saturday to 10 p.m. on Sunday at 55 or 60 decibels. If I'm outside, I hear it all the time, period. If I want to read a book, I'm going to hear that background music, period. Now, I also understand that we have to try to do something to be the balance. This morning, I had a very long conversation with the ownership and management of Saltwater Cowboys. They directly impact me. And the discussion was centered around bass. I can hear bass from DJs or bands that have drums inside my house, even if the decibel level is below 55. That is a violation of the way the ordinance is written. So, of course, I want to make sure that that's enforced when it comes about. But importantly, Saltwater Cowboys is working with me and I with them to try to come with a solution. And the solution, and they are meeting with sound engineers, professional sound engineers, to install speakers where all the music is played through their speakers only, but that they can adjust specifically the bass. And once it's locked, nothing the DJ can do can change that. We exchanged texts during Saturday night. It was not pleasant. We understand why. Working together. There's
sir. It's time, sir.
Time. Hours.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Reverend Rob Dewey, 598 East Hobcaw. I apologize for my attire, but I've been playing pickleball on your courts. So that's my excuse. And I'm retired. So I heard, I've been hearing about a possible memorial for first responders. And serving as your chaplain for 28 years and as chaplain for other agencies, I applaud that. I ask you to think about that this is a war memorial, and police officers, first responders go out every day, and it's a war zone out there. And how many officers that we have lost nationally every year, but some 10, 15 years ago, we dedicated a memorial for the police officer that I know of that died here in Mount Pleasant. And I think not to recognize our local first responders in Mount Pleasant, not that whatever other cities do doesn't bother us, but the other cities around us have this type of thing dedicated to first responders. So I hope that Mount Pleasant will consider this strongly. Thank you.
Next, please. Representative Bustos, thank you for representing Mount Pleasant, and it's good to see you today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Mayor Haney, members of council, at the appropriate time, I too would like to speak on the war memorial. I was a member of the committee. I'm also a retired Army officer, so it has very special meaning to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your service as well. Next, please, for public comment. Anyone else before it's gone?
Mr. Mayor, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Schell, and I live at 241 Middle Street in the Old Village of Mount Pleasant. I'm here in my personal capacity as well as capacity for an attorney, as the attorney for the individuals who own and operate the Post House and other food and beverage businesses in the town of Mount Pleasant. I have had the opportunity to express their positions to this committee in the past, and I will do so again today. Thank you for your indulgence. We understand the importance, as indicated by some of the earlier speakers, of reaching a balance as it relates to this noise ordinance. The businesses of Mount Pleasant that I have the honor of representing do not disagree. I, as an individual, do not disagree. As I indicated to you once before, I live five houses away from Alhambra Hall. I understand and I appreciate that noise can be something that you have to deal with, be it pleasant or unpleasant. That's the way it is. But this ordinance, as it is drafted, will be challenged as it is, because it does still have some loopholes that are unfair, probably to both citizens in their individual capacities and businesses. The subjectivity portion of it, the low decibel level that's allowed, the indication of infraction as soon as it reaches a violative level, all of those are issues that need to be addressed. To that point, I would ask the committee very respectfully that it consider a workshop. I work with other jurisdictions throughout the state, both boards of zoning appeals, planning commissions, et cetera, and I have found that that vehicle has been very successful in allowing the committee that's in charge, the residences, and the businesses to sit down and work together to come up with a viable solution to something that can be as controversial as this noise ordinance is currently drafted to be. Again, I respectfully request that the committee consider this request and schedule a workshop allowing everybody to have input and consideration before further action is taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, for public comment, please. Anyone else?
Good morning, Mike Tinkey, 208 Benning Street, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Thank you for your time and deliberation on the proposed noise ordinance. What is the overall goal of the noise ordinance? And under the existing ordinance, it shall be unlawful for any person to create, assist in creating, permit, continue, or permit the continuance of any unreasonably loud, disturbing, and unnecessary noise in a municipality. And the proposed ordinance, it goes on to say, whereas the citizens have a right to and should be ensured of an environment free of excessive noise. Your deliberations have included public input, which included comparative town ordinances, noise research findings in the U.S. and the South, and the Mount Pleasant Police Department 3-month decimal level. We have three issues that I see coming up. What are the decimal levels? In other words, we're looking for an objective standard for enforceability versus the current more subjective ordinance. What are the hours of operation? What's included, what's not? And will the ordinance withstand legal challenges? Objective data supports 60 daytime and 55 nighttime. The current ordinance ends at 9, and I urge you to keep the same. 60 and 55 is the average ordinances and therefore is not out of the norm and provides a supportable defense against lawsuits. If you're concerned about the validity of any of these studies, I encourage the Mount Pleasant Police Department to continue to do a study from the places where the noise is received. Do it from those places. And I did this with a town council member recently who wanted a higher level, and he was surprised to see with two bands going on at Shem Creek that it was under 60 on a busy night. And so I think he was surprised. Also, when he was at the post house, he found the same thing. Also, to the point of the previous speaker, hire a research expert on noise, just like you hired an expert for Crab Bank, in a sensitive issue to determine what the correct levels are. And ideally, if you have the survey done with the Mount Pleasant Police Department, have the interested parties present. I think it'll be very illuminating. Every time I've done it, it's very illuminating. So I think you have what you need to move forward. But if it feels like it's sensitive because of legal disputes and different types of things, I encourage you to concurrently do the Mount Pleasant Police Department study. Think about taking the existing ordinance from 1 month to 3 months and just trial it while you're doing the police department study. No one, you know, that way you'll find out if it's too high, too low, whatever. And therefore, I ask you to continue moving forward with that objective-based approach. Thank you.
Public comment next.
Good morning. Carol Tinkey, 208 Benning Street. Thank you for your time and your due diligence in studying the ambient sounds as we approach the new noise ordinance. One comment, most forms of pollution are addressed at a national level, but noise pollution is not. That falls to the local towns and cities as vanguards. And I don't see why this has to be an us versus them issue. Most of the business owners are all also citizens, and I don't think I think they're part of the us, and we need something that's fair to us. Nobody wants the threat of a mariachi band blasting through the night air set up outside of their bedroom window when they go home, the business owners included. We also want to be good neighbors. We want our businesses to be good neighbors. We live about 30 feet from the post house. We have not always agreed on everything, but we appreciate the fact that they are mitigating the noise that emanates from them. They're doing their best to be good neighbors, and I applaud their efforts. We haven't had complaints in a very long time. We can't function without these rules. You can't do anything in a society without rules and laws. You can't play a game of tennis. You can't build a house. You can't drive a car. We need laws that are reasonable, realistic, quantifiably clear. Just for a fact, the ambient noise on our porch is in the low 40s. So the new laws have to be capable of enforcement, so we have a good agency ready to go out and enforce. We need a practical approach to solving these problems. Citizens and business people can work together because we're one and the same. Thank you.
Next, please.
My name is Bill Deitch. I live at 216 Bennett Street. I'm here really to address one narrow question that I think the committee is facing, and that is the contention that the ordinance that's on the table now would be subject to legal attack. That's simply ludicrous. There's no question but that the ordinance as proposed is squarely within the police powers of the municipality to regulate nuisances, that hundreds of jurisdictions around the country have ordinances that are at least as rigorous as this one, and the council, we hope, would not be intimidated by the absurd threat of litigation. Thank you.
Next, please.
Would you be kind enough to pass around the paper I sent over if you haven't done so as yet?
I believe we are.
Oh, you have it. Thank you so much. Chris Coleman, 118 Pitt Street. During the last PJL meeting, Councilman Ritchie asked whether the noise ordinance was enforceable and reasonable. And I have two comments on that. As to reasonable, you've already heard that 55 or 60 decibels are the noise values most towns choose for residential daytime standards. Far fewer choose 65 or above for residential. This is true both nationally and regionally. So I asked, just to check my own work, the national expert on noise ordinances, and you have a letter from Wes Blomberg, who runs a clearinghouse, and his job in life is to actually write and review noise ordinances. He's worked with dozens of towns. He thinks 60 is too high in most cases, and 55 and 60 are readily achievable. He specifically pointed to Denver as having a 55 decibel daytime standard in residential areas. Best I can tell, Denver is doing just fine. It's the fastest growing state in the country. 65 decibels will interfere with a property owner's enjoyment of their own property. Mayor Haney, you observed that you would have difficulty hearing a phone conversation or doing difficult work on your computer at a level that high, and it will disturb you. But there's science behind that comment, and that's because every 5 decibels you go up is 50% louder. So I also attached for your entertainment a graph that shows that about a third of people find that 65 decibels is highly objectionable as noise. That goes down on a very steep curve the lower you go. If you get down to 55, hardly anybody complains. Noise impacts can be controlled, and again, I appreciate the comments many people have made here that other people are working with businesses, and I would propose to do likewise. It can be done. We can work together, and we can do better. Finally, one other critical point that Mr. Blomberg's letter points out is that the plainly audible standard contains a provision in it where plainly audible has to be at the level of normal conversation. What that does is that makes that standard unenforceable. What's normal conversation? How is it defined? And so he recommends that be changed and altered. And aside from that, why would you want in your own home to have normal conversation inside your house that's not you or your family? Doesn't need to be there, shouldn't be there. I would like to say that I appreciate a couple of the comments that were made around Citizens Committee. Perhaps we could bring in Mr. Blomberg to help moderate something like that. Yeah, and I appreciate some of the comments that say there are always things that can be done better in an ordinance. I welcome that sort of dialogue. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your interest in this issue. Thank you so much.
Next, please. Public comment.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jacqueline Story, 2020 Proximity Drive. I own a Gala Cafe and Bakery over on Pitt Street. And, you know, I want to be a good neighbor. It's important for me to, you know, be a community place. I want to have small gatherings there. That's the point of my business, is to bring people together. And I just want to make sure that, you know, people can still gather and have conversations. I mean, my place, I do tea service. It's not, you know, a wild bar or anything. And I recently just had my first event, and two of my patrons came back in and told me that they were scolded for having a conversation. They weren't intoxicated. They weren't talking loud. They were on the sidewalk having a conversation. And I just want to make sure that, you know, people are able to enjoy themselves and not have to deal with being the police being called on and that kind of thing. So I just, you know, I really hope that we can all work together and come up with something that's reasonable for everyone. Thank you so much.
Next, please.
Hey, everyone. Carmen Scott, 415 Church Street. My husband and I are the co-owners of the building that Gala Bakery is in at 123 Pitt Street. What Ms. Story didn't tell you about the interaction she had with a neighbor on the street was that it was two customers at 8:15 in the evening, accosted by a neighbor across the street in his driveway. They were not loud, they were not obnoxious, and this is inappropriate. So this is not just about fines to a business like Gala that can be debilitating if a neighbor calls on them repeatedly, but it is about accosting businesses and changing the way people can operate their businesses, affecting their ability to earn their incomes because of, hopefully not, but this committee arming citizens with the ability to call the police and have an ordinance. There is, I understand the gentleman that has the, that is by the brewery, that has the music, that's terrible. Something should happen. There is a level where we can meet. 60 is too low. 60 is too low. We're not here to intimidate this committee or council, but we are here to remind everyone that businesses and citizens do have rights, and there are legal consequences to affecting businesses. Thank you.
Next, please.
Ben Towle, 228 Forest Trail, Isle of Palms. I'm representing the owner of the Post House. Well, I am the owner of the Post House, not representing. I just want to thank the committee and the mayor and just address some of the comments that have been raised. Mr. and Mrs. Tinkia, I really appreciate your comments. I just think we've got more work to do. I think on behalf of the Post House, I think I'd love to weigh in on a further and have a further committee review of the existing ordinance and really address with some experts the decibel levels and look further into the national average that we keep referring to and see where those studies are coming from. I think we're talking about a few different things. I think the brewery, that's a separate issue to the bakery and the post house. I think we need to look at that, and I'd be very happy on behalf of the restaurant business to, and behalf of our 80 employees, to speak further and really get into the details of this decibel level and the timing of it and the special events permit. So on behalf of the Post House, I would make myself available at any point to have further discussions prior to this going any further. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Public comment, anyone else? Last call. All right, thank you very much. Item number four on our agenda is Police Matters, Employee Years of Service Recognition. Chief Arnold.
Good morning, Mayor and committee members. This morning we have an opportunity to recognize some of our employees for their years of service. I could have Karina Schultz please come forward. Karina joined the police department in September of 2017 as a community service officer working in our records unit. Sometime later, she took a position as an administrative assistant for the field operations captain and has done a fantastic job in both of those roles, and in fact, to this day, still continues to fill in when we needed. This past week, during the hurricane, she filled in and worked in records and helped answer his phone. So, always willing to help. I've called last minute to say, hey, can you fill in? And absolutely cheerful and happy to do so. So, thank you for 5 years of service, and we look forward to many more. Detective Schnackenberg. Detective Schnackenberg also joined the police department in September of 2017. In the patrol field operations, decided to become a detective and has done a fantastic job. Most recently has done tremendous work in our internet crimes against children operations. In fact, the most recent one, she had more arrests than anyone else, I believe. So absolutely fantastic work. Can't say enough positive about her. Thank you for 5 years of service and look forward to many more. FTO William Parker. FTO Parker also joined the police department in September of 2017. Has served in the patrol division the entire time. He's currently serving as a field training officer. I can't stress the importance of having a great police department. The foundation is definitely the training. Bringing people in and teaching them the right way to be a police officer. He excels at this. And so thank you for 5 years and look forward to many more. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number five is judicial matters, employee years of service.
Good morning, Mayor, Council, Mr. DeMora.
Good morning.
I'm here on behalf of Lori Wilson. My name is Carol Neal, and I'm the Deputy Court Administrator. This is Ms. Nancy Ham. Okay, so it's a privilege to give you this pin for 10 years of service. Most of you probably know Nancy from her position as the receptionist of the main lobby, where for many years she greeted council members, staff, visitors, residents with her warm smile and welcoming disposition. She still has it. Nancy joined the court office as the executive secretary in August of 2021. She brought with her caring and a positive attitude, which she extends daily to the defendants answering incoming calls. Nancy has embraced her responsibilities and the many changes that come along with the position. That's a constant. Nancy, I appreciate all the work you've done with the department and the town. I would like to thank you for your 10 years of service and dedication.
All right, this brings us to item number six, which is legal matters. Item 6A is continued discussion and possible action regarding an ordinance to repeal and replace section 132 titled Noise of Mount Pleasant Code of Ordinances. Mr. Pagliarini, let me ask you one legal question. I know we had a first reading on a noise ordinance, and we brought this up last month. Full council had a first reading. It does not go into effect unless it passes a second reading. However, the current noise ordinance, as written, is still in full force and effect. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. Ma'am. So that noise ordinance, and I don't know which year it was passed. Eric, you may know. 10, 12, 15 years. Carl, you may know. You had to enforce it all those years. Anyway, it's been years. All right. So that one is still in effect. So the reason I say that is just to sort of set the stage for if we... You know, there's so many aspects to this, so many different things to consider. We have a noise ordinance in place now. We're talking about, what does it say here, repealing and replacing? Repeal and replacing. So unless we get to the point of doing that, making amendments at second reading, we do have a noise ordinance currently in place.
I just correct.
Wanted to, okay, settle that and establish that. Mr. Pagliarini, if you would give us a few... background or
sure mayor and committee, last month we went through the ordinance as written. If you'd like to do that again, I'm glad to do so. Just as an overview, and perhaps the best way to do it is a general overview and then field questions. There is a series of definitions which are all included in the ordinance. Some key provisions are noise measurements, how it is measured, And you will note that this is from the property lines of the person who is affected by the noise. You will note that at least one of the most discussed provisions is shown on the screen, and that is daytime hours showing between 8 a.m. and 10:30, and then the decibel levels of 60 decibel level maximum during that time period, and then the evening hours 10:30 p.m. to 8 a.m., which is currently at 55. There are also provisions about excessive noise. These are situations that may not fit in any particular category, but this is more of the subjective approach rather than the objective standard to provide our officers, law enforcement, with the mechanism to deal with those situations. Specific prohibitions, these are items that, again, may be specific, not be able to be measured. But of course, we always bring the attention to part five, mufflers. That was for example, that was something specific, that an example that was provided in Town Center, I believe. And so this provision assists with those unusual or unsustained levels of noise. Violations and the purpose here is that the business itself, the business owner, can be held responsible, but not necessarily an employee. There are exceptions. This is also an area that has been discussed. And we want exceptions for our emergency vehicles, police, fire, ambulance, all of those types of noise that is just necessary. Sounds and activity normally associated with uses or special events, parades, or public demonstrations. There has been some discussion of possibly expanding this to include, while it probably is from a reasonability standpoint, to provide specific examples such as school operations and the like, high school football games and those types of events. Emergency work and construction. You will note that many years ago, our existing ordinance was expanded to deal with evening construction. In many cases, DOT, for example, is mandating evening construction, and there's just no way that by state mandate we can have that run afoul of our noise ordinance. There is a lawn care equipment and agricultural field equipment exception, garage machinery. These are typical businesses that operate that hopefully zoning would take care of most of these things, the exception being lawn care, which is probably necessary for residential communities. And then emergency signaling systems. So that is the ordinance as it stands. This is the ordinance that has been approved at first reading.
Okay, thank you very much. I will let the committee weigh in. I plan to weigh in at some point, but I want to let the committee members go first. Unless you want me to go first. All right.
Mr. Pegler, I have a question for you. Probably legal or procedural. I heard a comment today during our public speaking part about enacting or passing the ordinance but having a trial period. Is that even a possibility when you pass an ordinance, if this is what we decide to pass, if we do move forward at a council meeting, when we pass it as written and it has 90-day review at the end, but do we have to come back and start all over again with different readings? I'd love to get some guidance on that.
Sure. So just to recap for especially the members of the public and the committee, as to this ordinance, we have had a 90-day trial period. And to the mayor's point, our existing ordinance was in effect throughout that time. That ordinance was enforceable. It could be enforced by tickets and other penalties. And we had the trial period for 90 days. I presume there is a place where we could supersede that and have some version of what you just heard without penalties. I'm not sure of the appropriateness of that because then the town will lose any and all ability to enforce it during a trial period, meaning we would have nothing to enforce. And I'm not sure anyone wants to go in that direction.
I'm not sure that wasn't even the question I was asking as far as enforcement. I think when it's passed, it needs to be enforced. That was one of the biggest issues the police department had making sure we have something that is enforceable and measurable. I think the question came up for that, if we pass it for another 90 days, and I'm not saying I'm for against it, trying to get some good guidance on this, it would be enforceable, but then is there a point where we can evaluate whether it's a 60 or 55 or whatever it is, say, this is working out, yeah, or we need to go back?
I think going back, the simple answer is our council can adjust, modify any ordinance at any time, two readings. But I think your point is well taken, that is that going back and starting over? I really don't know of any other way to do that.
Let me make sure if I'm clear on the answer to that question. You can't have an ordinance that is passed, but is still in a trial period in effect. Did I get right? What you're saying is, could we pass it, but then for 90 days, the penalties and all that are not necessarily in effect?
Well, that's what I did. My question was, again, hearing the comments, was if we pass it as a council, and no, we would have the penalty phase, we would enact the ordinance as it's written. Mm-hmm. And go, is there an opportunity to come back 90 days later and see about site? I mean, citation is heavily written. Is the decibel levels the correct levels? Is there an opportunity to make adjustments if we do vote to put it in place? That was kind of my question there.
Okay. So would that start over with a first reading?
Yes, sir. Unfortunately, it would.
A first reading, then a second reading.
Sure. Not to bring up, but as Ms. Whitley was dealing with on our planning, our short-term rental, for example, that was passed. And over the years and over time, we've made modifications to that. And it'd be very similar.
Thanks. I have a question. I probably should have thought of this Thursday or Friday, but we had our minds on other things. Have there been, other than the ticket that went to a Shem Creek establishment that started this whole process, since we started this last fall? November, December, something like that. We're coming up on a year trying to work on this.
Direct that question to the chief.
Right. Have there been, to our knowledge, any tickets written under the existing ordinance other than that one? And I go back to what I call the Bob Bremer question. What problem are we trying to solve?
To my knowledge, no. That's the only ticket. I asked Captain Carter to pull the information from Consolidated Dispatches on how many times we were sent to noise complaints since we stopped the program. Last month, it was one call for service, and the month before that was one call for service for noise complaints. We've received via email, the town has, some emails regarding noise, but it's just been one per month and no citations.
Thank you.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
To follow up on the mayor's question, I think it was, have you written any other citations? But since we put the trial ordinance in place, correct me if I'm wrong, we weren't writing citations yet for this, okay? So I guess my question is, in your professional opinion, had there been opportunities that tickets could have been written if this had been passed? Because I said we were not writing them intentionally during the trial period.
Yes. The answer to the question is yes. There were a couple of instances where the decibel level was loud enough that we could have done that. I will say those were instances where we were proactively measuring, and it wasn't that we got a complaint from a citizen.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Mayor.
Right. No matter what we pass or under the current ordinance, if we put this off and have some community engagement and all that, there's still prosecutorial discretion, right? The police can show up and say, hey, just turn it down and everybody be okay. They're not obligated to write a ticket, just like when you get stopped for speeding. Is that not correct? You don't have to write a ticket. You don't have to come all the way back up here.
That is correct.
And that's a normal part of law enforcement, right?
Okay.
Got it. Okay. My concern is if we, and you know, this has fallen to this committee this entire time, and I thought it was going to be easy to just go from a subjective ordinance to an objective one. You know, there's the decibel meter, you got to turn it down. That has turned out not to be the case. live and learn. In my 7 years of public, being a public official, this is the first time we've brought up a noise ordinance, so I'm learning a good lesson. My fear is that unless we are getting calls right now, left and right, with complaints or having to show up, we don't need to rush to pass an ordinance that does not fix the problem. And for those who are having noise in their home or whatever, we're not insensitive to that. You can call right now, right? A citizen can call right now and say, regardless of the decibel meter, I think it's too loud. We've been living with that for 15 or 20 years. I'm sure like in anything, sometimes that can be abused or whatever. But I think if we rush to pass this with all the nuances and all the doubts and concerns we heard today, that we're going to be creating a problem rather than solving one. And I don't think that's our place at this moment. Doesn't mean we can't get there. I'm just talking about today or at next month's council meeting. I'd like to know if y'all agree with that.
My question.
Microphone.
Oh, sorry. I speak loud enough normally. My question is, if this goes back to council, or we do nothing with it, and we decide to continue this, how long do we continue it for? Because this has been going on for now, how long? Almost a year? Is that what I'm, and this is supposed to be 90 days? So at what point do we as elected body go ahead and take this on, bring it to full council, entertain any amendments that may need to be made or not made, and we vote on it? I mean, that's what we got elected to do. We've heard from our citizens, I think, many times. I've heard things that have changed my mind. I've heard things that have confirmed what I feel about the ordinance. So I really believe our citizens have been engaged, and I appreciate that. But I do think this has been going on for a year now, and I know one of the primary reasons was is to give our police department, the police department that I led for a long time, an ordinance that was not subjective, something that our police officers could go to a scene, and you're correct. They, with the old ordinance, they could either write a ticket or they could tell them to turn it down, but they could do the same thing here. Just the other one, I think the officers and the citizens were deciding at that point, was that too loud with us? Was it not too loud? Where we have decibels set, whatever that decibel level is going to finally be, they have a tool that can be used. And we have to understand, I've heard a lot of conversation about conversations in our house, music inside. It's not what's going on in your home. It's that music that comes from that business that goes to your property line that's interfering with your enjoyment of your property. That's what we're trying to address and deal with. And I believe this ordinance can do that. There may be some opportunities to look at the time or the decibel levels, but I think at this point we need to get this thing to council. And I appreciate your comments, Mayor, and what you're saying about, are we trying to create a problem or not solve a problem? It was brought to us as a problem, and the problem was we didn't have anything objective in this ordinance before our police department. So I don't know if we need to have another motion for it to go back to council, or is it just going to be back on the agenda, sir, for second reading? I would love to know that answer.
So it is currently situated to where this matter will be on the agenda next Tuesday unless this committee tells us otherwise. If this committee tells us otherwise, obviously there are a number of paths that can go, continued discussion and the like. If this committee wishes for the matter to not be on the agenda next week, of course, any one council member per our rules, because this has been heard, a committee could place it on the same. So I just want this committee to understand that rule. But that is where we are currently situated.
And Chief, I understand what you're saying. What I don't want is us to get in there and basically broker a political deal for a decibel level when I think we could justify what we come to by means of the science of it, working with the community. Because if we just vote on something because that's what'll get five votes and pass, I'm not sure that will be doing the best we can do by this. Just this, you know, within a week is what I'm saying.
Mayor, I appreciate that, and I respect that, your opinion and your observation. but have we not had a year almost to work on this ordinance? And I would hope that our staff, and I know our staff and our police department, we have looked at science, and the science has been applied to this, and the standards have been applied. So I don't believe that this has just been numbers that have been arbitrarily put into this ordinance. Again, I know our legal teams put a lot of time and worked on it. So me personally, I'd like to see it going forward to next week and let us discuss it and debate it the way we should be in making the amendments that may be brought forward and pass the ordinance for our citizens. That's just my opinion, so okay. I appreciate that.
So since it would be a second reading, it would be open to amendments. We do not have to do amendments in this committee. We don't have to recommend any. I don't know what all the council members are thinking, but we don't have to have a discussion today on what amendments we would like to see. Correct.
That is not required, sir.
Right. So it would be up for second reading, and people could make individual amendments as they saw fit. I would like to ask a legal question. I don't mind doing openly, unless you say we shouldn't advise us that. I have a concern about leaf blowers. The position has been stated that, you know, we would be favoring one industry over others, the landscape industry over the hospitality. I get that. I just don't know what are the legalities of that, or is that something that you should not give that advice in public?
No, sir. I think it's appropriate. And we have in the past, of course, discussed some generalities about these, and some of our speakers were very educated on the subject. These ordinances are going to be presumed to be valid, presumed to be constitutional. If there is a provision, to get into the details, if there is a provision which is not, it will not necessarily blow up, terminate the entirety of the ordinance. So those provisions could be dealt with. I do think, as a matter of fairness, you raise an excellent point as to, regardless of whether it's legal, as to whether it is fair in conjunction with the remainder of the ordinance.
Right. The other concern I have is how you would distinguish between amplified noise and a bunch of 10-year-olds having a birthday party at the swimming pool. And we all know, if we've had children, they can make pretty high decibel level. But we don't want to, I like your term, we don't want to sanitize Mount Pleasant to where you're afraid to have your child's birthday party in your backyard, that type thing. So those are some of the concerns that I have going forward.
Mayor.
Yes, sir.
I've tried to stay somewhat out of this since I have a hearing defect myself and might not be able to properly, compared to other people, make a determination. I agree with the chief, or Carl, or council member, that we need to give our police department something they can hang their hat on when they go out. It's not just Officer John Doe who's out there and thinks it's too loud, whereas his supervisor doesn't think it's too loud. We've had a number of our citizens bring something to us. And by the same token, we've been talking about this for a long time. And every meeting, we've had something new come up and continue to come up. And I would be willing to bet when we pass this, we'll still have people come and tell us something new. So I think we need to either make a determination to move forward or throw everything out and leave us where we are. I err on the point of giving our police officers an opportunity to directly make that determination rather than subjectively making the determination, since it's been brought to us. And Mayor, I'm like you. There are some sections of that have been excluded that I might have a reason to say something about, such as people who ride motorcycles being too loud in a business area that disturbs the peace. So, you know, we're going to continue to have discussions, I'm sure, about this down the line, but I think a number of our citizens have come to us with a concern. And I think the businesses have a right to have a defined terminology or defined amount where they can have their music, play their music, and not have somebody who doesn't like 30 decibels near their house. They need to have a definite amount, and I think we need to give it to them on both sides.
So as it stands, this will be up for second reading next Tuesday's council meeting. Item 6B is discussion and possible action regarding a policy to govern memorials and monuments. This would be for the entire town. This is not about any particular park, although we'll hear a lot about, you know, about Waterfront Park. This would be an ordinance townwide. And since it is discussion and possible action, I do, to sort of set the stage for the discussion, we've got some people here that have some input. They've done some work on this. I think it's fine, unless the parliamentarian tells me not to, to have that discussion first before we move to anything. This is a committee meeting. So I would like to ask General Tant to come back up, please. And I had all the council members received, and I want to thank our staff for getting this. The I think it was from 2006 to 2009 when the Memorial Waterfront Park was finally constructed and built. And I've looked over, I hope y'all have had a chance, the minutes of all of those meetings. There are people from the town that were on that commission. Representative Bustos is here. Colonel Myron Harrington is here, decorated for valor in the Battle of Way City in Vietnam. Pat Waters was on that commission. Mac Burdett was on that commission. And I may have left somebody out. If I did, I apologize. But General, y'all did a lot of work, including traveling to Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir.
To meet with the battle. Was it the Battlefield Trust? It's all right here.
Yeah, the American Battle Monuments Commission.
Monuments Commission.
Yeah.
And I know that that our town administrator, Eric DeMora, led this project. In talking with him about it, I learned some things about the aspect of the park that I didn't even know, that concern your focus, your immersive experience, filtering out noise from the bridge, having things focus on that memorial. And we're here today to try to find out, as time has progressed and more things have come up and more ideas for the park, we want to do anything we do going forward, we want to do it for something that A, respects the work of people who came before us, and B, respects the focus of the park, and C, something that will stand the test of time, both physically and in terms of content. And that's why the head of our historical commission is here, because let's face it, we have qualified people that make those decisions and have that input, not just yes or no on what to do or not do, but how to encapsulate so that if somebody's looking at that 50 years from now, that it's relevant and it's meaningful, and that we're not, you know, changing plaques or rewording plaques and that type of thing. So, General, if you'll just give us a quick overview. There's okay. No time limit on this now.
All righty. I just want you to know, sir, and committee members, council members, that I'm a pack rat. And so I've got a lot of newspaper, wonderful newspaper articles that have a history of what went on. They're a lot more than this. And anyway, once again, I'm Hugh Tan, and I'm a Mount Pleasant native and retired Army Brigadier General, and I feel that I'm uniquely qualified to speak to this issue of the location of what I understand to be a proposed 9/11 memorial. I think everybody knows about our war memorial pretty much, but I'm open to answer anything about that. But I was wanting to address mainly that. My last 5 years of active duty were at the Pentagon, where I relied on subject matter experts to prepare me to brief Capitol Hill some 120 times on basically budgetary matters, why we needed money to fly more hours to train or fix tanks. And on 9/11, 33 of these subject matter experts that I worked with were killed, plus two of my close friends. Lieutenant General Timothy Maud and Lieutenant Colonel Gary Smith, forgive me. In 2003, as part of our national response to 9/11, I was chosen by Ambassador Paul Bremer to serve in Iraq as a director of the Iraqi Currency Exchange, where we changed out the national currency of Iraq under fire in 6 months. I must be becoming a very old man. It normally takes 2 to 3 years to change out a nation's currency during peace. But when you're getting shot at, my 750 troops worked a lot faster. So I guess the moral of the story is you work faster if you get shot at. Let's don't do that. During 2008-2009, I served as the executive director of Patriots Point before I finally retired. Overlapping in 2006-2009, as you mentioned, I was selected by Mayor Harry Holman to serve as the chairman of the Mount Pleasant Memorial Waterfront Park Memorial Committee, that's a mouthful, to develop a monument to honor those 74 known patriots from Mount Pleasant and Christ Church Parish who gave the ultimate sacrifice in defense of our nation. The waterfront park and the memorial honoring it were its war heroes was never intended to be a national attraction, but a place of reflection and relaxation in an open green space for our citizens and our visitors. Again, the Memorial Waterfront Park has no national significance like Patriots Point. It represents what makes Mount Pleasant unique and appealing to people of all ages. Sweetgrass baskets, fishing pier, shagging on the pier, the blasting of the fleet, fantastic playground in the shade of the Ravenel Bridge, and wide open green spaces, which are rare to find and need to be preserved. Medal of Honor recipient Colonel Robert Howard spoke about our war memorial at the dedication ceremony on the 5th of July, 2009. He made it clear that patriots of Mount Pleasant, once known as Christ Church Parish, have played a significant role in the creation and preservation of our great republic. And it is right and proper to honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our liberty. Also at the dedication ceremony was someone you know well, Colonel Mac Burdett, who was on the War Memorial Committee, as you mentioned, and who was also the town administrator. He aptly described the vision of our town's tribute to our veterans who gave their lives for liberty, and I quote, While this beautiful monument will provide a place for reflection and remembrance for anyone who wishes to honor this nation's veterans, this monument, most particularly, he had it underlined, will serve as a monument to the 74 known residents of Mount Pleasant and Christ Church Parish who gave their lives on the altar of freedom, as well as those who are known only to God, beginning with the War of Independence against Great Britain. Clearly, end quote, clearly the Mount Pleasant Memorial Waterfront Park, where we have our war memorial, was developed and dedicated to be the place of honor our local patriots who gave their lives for the cause of freedom. Let's preserve the solemnity of the war memorial at Mount Pleasant Waterfront Park and the local nature of the park itself. I served as the director of Patriots Point for a year, which honors national treasures, such as the U.S. Yorktown, the USS Laffey, National Medal of Honor Museum, the Vietnam War Experience, and a space exploration exhibit. At Patriots Point in 2008, we started the 9/11 memorial ceremony and included first responders from New York who had moved to Mount Pleasant and Somerville. Pause just for a second. On the front of the, and I'll pass that around to you, but on the front of the Moultrie News, they talked in detail about that ceremony in this paper. I bet they did a great job. And we have other pictures there that show the two gentlemen who were from New York. I'm sorry, I don't mean to turn back on you all, gracious. But the two gentlemen who were New York firefighters during the attack on 9/11, and their names were Johann Zamosianik of Somerville and Bill Pestatour from Mount Pleasant. And they were there. And also the students and Harry Hallman were there, and we had a wreath laying, very meaningful ceremony for 9/11. That should be going on today. I don't know if it is or not, but we went all out. There was a marching across the Long Pier, bagpipers from the fire department. Our Mount Pleasant police were there. Moultrie Middle School students who had written papers about what 9/11 meant to them, they were there, they marched, and the whole line of them are right there on the front page. And it was a magnificent ceremony, I must say. And it was well attended by the public, and it was just great. And that's a national ceremony to me. I think it's obvious. But it was just a perfect venue at Patriots Point for any 9/11 memorial and perhaps a 9/11 learning center. They have one in Washington, D.C. that I've been to. It's fantastic. They have artifacts, and there are artifacts that are available that could be drawn upon and brought to, I'm saying, Patriots Point, because I'm such a fan of Patriots Point and I'm such a supporter of this effort to have a 9/11 memorial. It's absolutely wonderful to have. And then we take care of our local police and firemen and first responders out at our Mount Pleasant Memorial Waterfront Park as they deserve. So 9/11 is obviously a national event and it deserves the richest exposure and learning experience possible. Place it where hundreds of thousands visit each year, where major memorial and learning opportunities already exist. I strongly recommend a 9/11 memorial be seriously considered for location at Patriots Point, where we honor 9/11 already. Now, I thought I was done, and I read this thing to my wife, and she said, Hugh, you forgot something. 48 and a half years, she's been on my case, but I love her to death. She won't let me go wrong. She said, how much revenue will the town and state receive from a 9/11 memorial based on where it's located? Well, in my opinion, if we put it out at Mount Pleasant Memorial Waterfront Park, we'd have to sell a lot of hot dogs and cotton candy and everything to even try to cover the expenses of maintaining. And out at Patriots Point, it could become part of their national exhibits, their national story. And they could roll that into their advertising budget, and the hotels are out there, and the impact of that economically would be profound, in my opinion. Because once the word got out, hey, Patriots Point's got something new and so meaningful, people would come. They already pay fees. They do that. And so it would be good for the state, be good for our town, be good for our county, I believe. So, having said that, we need a champ. If you go along with that or consider it, we would need a champion in the House and Senate to achieve a funding earmark in this upcoming January 2013 budget build. And that's for the budget of 1 July 23 through 30 June 24. Who knows what's going to happen to the economy after that. But right now, 1 January, in that session, they start building the budget. And I say we need to try to get an earmark of funds from our state and move forward. If you need an economic impact study, probably y'all know this better than I do, but I understand that Clemson University has a great hospitality and tourism program, and they'll do those kinds of studies and lay it all out. I don't even believe putting anything like a 9/11 memorial at Mount Pleasant Waterfront Park would make a lot of sense. Patriots Point's the way to go. Subject to your questions.
Yeah, before we do that, Representative Bustos, as a member of the commission, did you have any remarks you want to make, or as a member of the legislature? Feel free.
Yes, just briefly.
Please, come on up to the...
It's hard to follow you.
Yeah, I was also... Representative Joe Bustos, 649 King Street here in Mount Pleasant, also a lifelong resident of Mount Pleasant, except when I was in the Army, and a graduate of Moultrie High School with you. And I certainly, that presentation was very detailed, and I won't go any further because I couldn't expand on that. That was very good. And certainly, if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected to the State House, I will champion that. And I would ask for your guidance.
while we do that, as well as towns. As a member of the committee that looked at that, we were very focused. And we did a lot of research. We went to Washington, as was mentioned. And I think General Tant was right on target with his comments. And I support those fully. And as I said, if I'm fortunate enough to be reelected, I will do that. And I look forward to it as well. Thank you.
While y'all are both up there, I have a question for you. I'm looking at the minutes from Thursday, February 8th, 2007. And y'all were both present, by the way. item number three is discussion of statuary, location, and character. And I see you hired a consultant, I think Caskey, was it Mr.?
Caskey was the sculptor.
Was the sculptor of that. ADC?
Yeah, ADC Engineering. Yeah.
Okay.
Warren Pruitt.
So, and there was a question asked that's in the minutes, because we all know that there's a fountain there. And I walk down there almost daily, not every single day, but I was down there twice this weekend. And one of the questions was asked was, other than the noise, what is the purpose of the fountain? And the answer was very profound. That it's not just there to cancel out the noise, to be white noise from the bridge, but to give you an immersive experience, that once you go into that little area, it's almost like a grotto in a lot of ways. It's got the pergola, it's got the berm. You're separated from the rest of the world, and you're focused on those names, you're focused on that statue, and you hear those waters running, symbolizing eternity and all of that. And it was done. I mean, I don't know how many months y'all spent before y'all decided on exactly what to do, but I mean, y'all spent a whole lot of time going into that, right? Okay. And so anything that we do, and I'm not here to say what we will or won't do at that park, but I think anything we do that distracts from that and that experience, whether it's with lights or scale or anything of anything else that goes in the park, would be disrespectful not only to the names on that wall, which I have a picture of in my pocket, but the work that y'all did over years to get that park to be what it is.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say one thing about Ray Caskey, the sculptor. He worked hand in glove with Warren Pruitt when it came time to emplace the monument as in the setting of the monument. And he is absolutely first class in advising us about water features and lighting features and the approach to the central area of the monument, you know, to have the bricks there. For anyone who had a veteran in their family that they wanted to honor who didn't die in combat or like the ones that are on the wall, mm-hmm. But if they wanted to honor that relative, they could have those bricks placed there, and quite a few bricks are there. And but Ray Caskey, he's done some profound work internationally and nationally. And even Portlandia in the harbor of in Oregon is a huge statue, 38 feet, I believe, something like that. And he designed that, but more so, he did the sculpture work for the law enforcement memorial in Washington, D.C., the lions overlooking the family and protecting. And he said that was his hardest sculpture work, is what I recall him telling me, because getting the right expression on the lions, because they are there to protect us. And so I'm just saying, if anything goes on with the 9/11 thing, I would ask for his advice. And if there's any sculptor work that needs to be done for, you know, on a local basis or at a national type thing at Patriots Point, I would call on Ray Caskey.
And I just want to say to the committee members and any other council members that are in the room, I just counted, there were 9 people on that committee. And y'all spent years, and one of the items right here, item 3,
of not only the statuary, but the location and the character, and that's for the whole monument. So there was a lot of thought put into that.
A lot.
And a lot of time.
It was a deep thing to us, and we all recognize that when people go to visit, that a solitary figure of that woman there holding the triangulated flag to her breast with her strong arm, and then her weaker arm is resting on a helmet that possibly held a soldier at one time, and it's resting on a rifle, which represents a battlefield cross. That's what happens. The bayonet goes down in the ground, and the rifle is there, and the helmet's on top, and taps are played. But each person, each child, each adult that sees her, something is evoked in them, I believe, and different from each person. Everybody has their own thing. Mm-hmm. We talked about children climbing on the monument, and we thought about it a while, and we said, why not? You know, as long as they're safe with their parents, you know, hopefully they got the supervision, and that means something to them when they grow up to be an adult. They'll remember that, and they'll realize that freedom is not free ever, and there are a lot of sacrifices that have to be made by people in order for us to live free, have wonderful meetings like this, and enjoy Mount Pleasant and right. Mount Pleasant Waterfront Memorial Park. Yeah,
appreciate it. Thank you all. Thank you for your service to our town and our country. Ms. Sutherland, can I get you to come up as chair of the Historic Commission? I'm sorry, historical. I always could debate which word would be appropriate. I think it's history, actually. But it doesn't matter. Thank you.
I think it's historical. It is not hysterical.
There you go.
That's what we know for sure.
Thank you. And did you have some comments you wanted to share first before I ask you a few questions?
Absolutely. First of all, this is a very, you two gentlemen are a very tough act to follow, and appreciate your service very much. And I know how hard you work because I read all your minutes, and you just did a really monumental job. I think what I would like to address, Mayor and council members, is more the process. I think we do have a bit of a loophole in that historical monuments of any kind do not really go through a process like the Historical Commission when we deal with signage. And as I mentioned in my public comments, I think it would be fairly simple to correct that and kind of plug that loophole and create a good process where the Historical Commission can be involved and the town can have eyes on it and just make sure that location, verbiage, material is all appropriate in keeping with the image that we want to project for the town of Mount Pleasant. And currently, one of our, I pulled out to some key clauses in the ordinance, and the purpose of the Mount Pleasant Historical Commission is to A, preserve, protect, and promote the integrity of properties significant in local history, architecture, archaeology, engineering, economics, transportation, and culture, and to initiate, encourage, and maintain local historical preservation efforts in coordination with community desires and the town's land use comprehensive plan. And in addition, the ordinance goes on to describe duties and powers. The Historical Commission has been charged with responsibility for the historical marker program to promote local sites, events, and persons through the historical marker program. The town's historic marker program has very specific guidelines regarding size, location, purpose, text, and it goes on to further describe our jurisdiction. The commission's jurisdiction applies to all real property within the municipal limits of the town, including all future annexation. So that also includes all the parks. So I think that there could be some verbiage that would be added that would include not only historical markers, but memorials or monuments.
Two quick things. One of the things I noticed from the commission that Representative Bustos and General Tant was on was making sure that they verified the names of the veterans that were etched in the proverbial stone. Because once it's done, and you certainly don't want to have something down the road where you find out someone did not, in fact, die in the war, and we've put their name on stone. Is this something that the historic, if this council moves forward and does this and empowers, is this something that your commission, you as the current chair, would say, this is our purview, this is what we're here for, we will make sure that before anything is recommended to council and passed, that the wording, the accuracy and everything is there, or am I thinking too big?
No, I think that's exactly the purpose of the commission, and that is actually what we do right now every time we get a signage proposal. We don't just take somebody's word for it. We actually, dig in and do the research, and then we start working on the verbiage, and sometimes it could take us 6 months to get it right.
There's something in, I've got the legal gave me this, and committee members, y'all are all given a copy of this, that it says that y'all don't operate in a bubble. When there's an application or something, y'all work with the applicant to get everything right, to get the wording right. And the other thing is you only have so much, you might want to put this much, but somebody's got to get it down to the nuts and bolts of what we're trying to memorialize. And as I said, has to be there 100 years from now or longer.
Okay. Right.
So if we're contemplating having all the applications for monuments and memorials other than just the markers come to the commission for y'all to go through it all and make a recommendation to council, that would be okay with the commission as it is now?
Yes. I mean, it's certainly something that we could do.
Okay.
The commission, we have a meeting next week, and I plan to, bring this proposal up to them, so they really are not aware of the upcoming changes, but I think they would welcome it.
Okay. Mr. Paglini, I think you have a few nuts and bolts, and so while he's up here, I'll ask committee members if y'all have any questions. If you'll give us the overview, Deb, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You can be seated. Of something that this committee could draft.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. I have put together just a few slides, and what this anticipates is creation and implementation of a policy by ordinance to deal with memorials and monuments. As we sit here, our policy is more ad hoc, meaning we deal with them on a case-by-case basis with no formal position. So what I've put together contemplates such an exercise. So the purpose, we'd want to create a fair and cost-effective policy to commemorate people, history, events, and ideas in the town of Mount Pleasant, and while maintaining the beauty and functionality of our parks and other property. You do have in front of you, credit to Chief Ritchie for pulling the City of Orlando policy. We've looked at a number of them. He pulled that, and it does provide a very good example of what is out there. And so in your spare time, if you'd like to take a look at that, it lays it out fairly well. If it is nonspecific in some areas, we can certainly improve upon it. So the process would start by a third-party application. Keep in mind that there is no prohibition to a movement within the town, whether that's by council directive, by committee directive, but what we're mainly talking about are third-party applications. And it would apply to approval of memorials and monuments on town property. Of course, not private property. That would more be dictated by our DRB and signs and the like. We would create this ordinance somewhat similar to what you have in front of you of the City of Orlando. And you'll see on the bottom of this slide, the ordinance would work in conjunction with and not supersede the Town Historical Commission. a relevant question was just asked by the mayor, could this move forward? And as our historical commission chair indicated, what we would prefer is just a slight change in the powers and authorities, essentially expanding those powers and authorities to deal with monuments and the like. So that is a very simple ordinance change. Considerations. So this is really first decision that we'd want from council is implementation. Do we want an ordinance? Do we want it? And this committee could, after we're through discussion here, advise or direct legal to prepare that, and we would have that for you for consideration. But the main decision within the ordinance would be town council has final decision on all monuments and memorials, or that town council has final decision on large memorials and staff has final decision on small memorials, and there are definitions of those. We would certainly prefer the latter. There are any number of park benches, trees, and the like that probably are not most effectively heard by our council. But as you go through and you see the various ordinances and policies throughout our country, this is a fairly common way of doing it. So the criteria, those are just all things that would be considered. And in the application that we would develop, the applicant would have to display that they have the ability to pay for this, both in implementation and maintenance. They'd have to essentially provide us a subject matter. What are the criteria? Large memorials, outstanding contributions to the town, state, or nation, and that are historically and culturally important. Existing memorials, do we want five of the same or even two of the same? Design, content, and no commercial benefit, as well as location, risk assessment, all of those things. Staff would intake the application and check off on all of these elements and include, to the mayor's point, the historical commission for accuracy and review. They could also bring in DRB as necessary, legal, any other element or research needed in order to validate and verify. Of course, the burden is on the applicant, so they would have to be an active participant in this process. So this is just an overview of at least the process as one person sees it. That's me. Staff review to ensure criteria. If it is a small memorial, in this circumstance, staff may grant approval. All of this information would come to the committee. The committee could further require study, again, through DRB, Historical Commission, staff, legal for specific issues, and then committee final review findings and council review.
Mr. Pagliarini, for what's considered a town-sponsored request, would that be something that the council would have to vote on to say we want to sponsor an application? Because otherwise, individual council members can unilaterally bring forth an application, in which case I would consider them an individual applicant and not a town sponsor.
Yes, ma'am. I would anticipate, and I think best practice is that to be a town council decision to move forward with the process and then ultimately circle back for council approval.
Mayor, I would like to recommend, I guess we want to vote to direct staff to draft a policy. Is that what is on the
table? Yes, ma'am. It's in an ordinance form.
Okay.
Yes.
I would like to move that we direct staff to draft an ordinance for this. I think, I'll wait for discussion. So I would like to move that we recommend a staff to draft a policy to govern memorials and monuments in town.
I'll second it. But I would like our staff, including the staff attorneys, to look at the City of Charleston Historical Commission and what they're allowed to do. It's a lot more than we have, and it would go hand in hand with what we're trying to do, and I'm very familiar with that. So that's just part of discussion, I guess, but I've seconded the motion.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes.
I think this is really important because I think that there are so many good causes out there. There are so many worthy causes, so many historical events, so many issues and things that people are passionate about that would be hard to say, no to. That I think that
having a procedure in place, having a process in place so that, you know, you can't sort of expend, especially expending town dollars on something, taxpayers' money on something that maybe is not fully, you know, approved by a process and a procedure. I think it can get expensive for the town, and I also think that we can get overrun in our parks with memorials and monuments, especially when things have a particular purpose. They already have memorials or even new memorials. I think having a procedure in place where does it fit within the purpose, what's already there, I think having that criteria is really important. And I would think, you know, even things that, like, for example, one of the monuments that I was supportive of, like, for was a bronze statue of Captain Magwood for our historical shrimping fleet. I think that's something that should probably have to go through this process as well, because it's still in the fundraising process, and, you know, we're not trying to get town funds for it, we're just trying to get community funds for it. But I think having a process, having a public, you know, discourse on it would help support that, and maybe generate, if people are really passionate about wanting to have a memorial for a certain thing, you know, footing the bill for that rather than having the town do that in every instance.
Right, and to that point, you also don't want to have a situation where, let's say, the fundraising started lagging on that, and it went on 5-6 years, and people decided, well, let's do it on the cheap for now because we want to see something, we want to see progress. We need something other than council, you know, political influence to say what the standards are for that. This is why I think having DRB involved, and they don't have authority, but they can make a recommendation, because as Carl and I were talking about for the memorial for Officer Key, the only person to ever die that we know of in line of duty for our town. You want that memorial to last forever, and you don't want it to look inappropriate for the person that you're honoring just because of budget constraints or something. You want it to have the scale and the composition of something that befits the person we're trying to memorialize. Chief?
Hope you'll indulge me for that.
Yeah, get your mic. Thank you.
Listening to all these comments, a lot of emotions. It's very emotional, especially for me. General Tant, Representative Bustos, I have so much respect for both of you. I'm a veteran. I serve both in country and overseas. I have 2 sons. Both served in Afghanistan as the direct result of the act of war when they attacked the Twin Towers. So when I think of that, and as much as I respect all of your comments, we have the war memorial. That 9/11 was an act of war, in my opinion. They attacked this country. They attacked us on our soil, and we fought back. Now, as a first responder of well over 33 years, I definitely have a special place, obviously, for all those that were on Ground Zero. I know many of them. I know many of them who lost family members. Mount Pleasant is a very special place. I'm just saying this because the 9/11 memorial got brought up, and it's something that Mr. Councilman Santos has brought forward. He can talk about that later some other time about funding. But Mount Pleasant is a very special place, and I'm just briefly say, we have always honored those who lost their life during 9/11. I have personally been involved in the 9/11 walks you spoke of, sir. During the pandemic, they were going to cancel the 9/11 walk. Myself, Chief Mixon, 2 of our firefighters, and 2 of our, we walked that bridge because that act of war against our country, and I was not going to let our first responders not be remembered. For whatever reason, recently, they did not have a 9/11 walk. I don't know what happened, but I rode my motorcycle. Yes, it's loud, Mr. Chapman. With all due respect, sir, I love you there. But we rode that and brought one of the 9/11 flags, one that were made from all the names of those who perished in 9/11, to the American Legion at Goose Creek. I will never stop honoring those that were involved in 9/11, that died in 9/11, and we need it somewhere. Do I think the Memorial Park is appropriate? Well, I do. Could there be other venues? And that's a discussion for another day, but because I do see that as an act of war. We have many folks who live here in Mount Pleasant now that in the Charleston area that were there, or know people that were there. General, sir, I sure respect the idea of being at Patriots Point, but you usually have to pay to get in Patriots Point. You have to pay a fee or parking to get there. here at the park. You know, I know so many of these folks, myself as a first responder, as a veteran, sometimes you just need to go. It can be in the middle of the night, sir. I'm sure you've experienced that. You just need to go sit quietly and reflect, no matter what time of day it is. And that memorial will give that opportunity. I think about children, our citizens walking by it, just like our beautiful war memorial. Because people are forgetting 9/11 already. Again, they're sitting at 9/11 speech, they're forgetting what happened. And there are these type of monuments all over the nation, and I think we can do it as a town in a very honorable, respectful way. I believe there's some money involved. Let me shift past that. We currently have a first responder memorial already down at Waterfront Park. Very well designed, very well, it looks great. Where we honor all of our first responders. And it's not a memorial, it's a monument to honor. Let me make that clear. It's a monument honoring those who sacrifice, put in every day, not knowing if they're coming home, quite frankly, who respond to that call for service. December 13th, 1985, Officer Ed Von Key responded to such a call, was killed in the line of duty. He is our only officer to ever die in the line of duty for Mount Pleasant. I hope he's the only one that will ever die. And yes, there's a historical marker where he was killed. But you drive by it at 35 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour, you don't see it. You don't get to reflect on it. This, again, is a place where when the whole world is defunding police departments, not supporting our police department, I know Mount Pleasant's not that way. My God, we have such support here. That is the perfect place to honor Officer Key. And I know as we go forward, and I'll be pushing that very hard to make sure Officer Key is memorialized. And I know it's going to happen. I know I've got the support of our council members. So, and I hear about the revenue, sir. I respect that. You got to have funding to pay for things. Again, I don't know where the funding's, the 9/11 memorial is coming from, but our town owes Von Key that memorial. So I'm not, the funding, we'll find that. We owe it to him. We voted to him since 1985, quite frankly. And I know we're naming a street after him in the near future. Again, this just fails in comparison to what the ultimate sacrifice he made that day, leaving family and a fiance behind. Something that always just dug at me the whole time I served here. Why didn't we do more for Officer Key? So there's always ways to, you know, collect revenue, and the town will always do that, and we will. I just don't want us to get political over these particular monuments. That is just not the place for it. Do I believe we need guidelines? Yes, sir. We had that discussion. And Mr. Pegri, I want to add something to, as we're discussing this, to the language as we look at guidelines. You know, it is the wear. It is the design. It is the cost. Who's paying for it? Who's maintaining it? But also, we all talked about, or I talked with you, sir, and Mr. DeMora. What about those pop-up monuments? We need something to address. And I think back to all the civil unrest I was involved in, where a lot of emotions, a lot of things going on in our nation that maybe didn't happen right here specifically, but we had many of our own, you know, disasters here or crisis here. How do we deal with those that pop up? Somebody sticks that sign in the ground or makes that impromptu memorial. We need to respect that. I want to respect that and honor that. But how do we deal with it going forward to eventually, you've had the time. It's time to remove it. So, and believe me, let me clarify that too. I don't want to say anything about removing monuments either. I will never support removing history. I'm talking about that pop-up that can occur. You know, and again, a small example. We see the ones on the side of the road when there's been a fatality. You know, are we addressing those? Yes, state right away, probably not. But I'm thinking about the town-owned properties. You know, right now I'm working with our VFW also, with Veteran Circle. I've been to several meetings with them. I know Mr. Weiss back there has been in discussion with them. You know, we had the Veteran Circle right there, off of Rifle Range Road. There's been discussion from them wanting something as well, a little more prominent, where people could come visit. Right now you can't really stop, sit, and there's a bench there, but you really can't do that. You might be hit by a car, but quite frank. So there are so many things that we need to look at for our veterans and our first responders. You know, I think I heard Reverend Dewey, you know, sir, you mentioned we go to war every day. You know, It's tough. It's tough to be a first responder. It's tough to be a soldier, you know, an airman, you know, a seaman. But we all signed up because we wanted to do it. I put my son on an airplane on Christmas Day to go back to Afghanistan. I understand sacrifice. That park is a beautiful place to memorialize, I believe, my officer. And again, because we have the first responders monument there, I would support, obviously, the 9/11 monument there. But Mayor, I understand we got to have some type of criteria. It can't just be thrown up. It can't just be something that takes away from that beautiful war memorial. I understand the lighting issue, because obviously when I look at Von Key, I'm thinking, you know, thin blue line, some type of light, perpetual lighting to honor him. So I understand all that. But I just wanted to make sure I said that. In general, thank you so much, sir, for your comments. And I hope you understand where I'm coming from, too, when I speak like that. It's very passionate for me. So.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. And you hit on another aspect, too, is that, and not any of them necessarily the ones that were mentioned today, but everything, we've got a whole town where we can put things as well. And we don't have to concentrate everything in one part of town. And that's something that, as we look at this in total, the commission, you know, council and all that, there's lots of places to put things where, in some cases, they might be more prominent than if they're just another thing at Waterfront Park. So we have a motion. We have a second. We've been in discussion. This would take what path? Would it come back to this committee next month, or would it go to council next Tuesday?
No, sir. This is going to take a while. We will bring it to committee next month.
Okay.
And then we'll take it for further comments, as we've heard several ideas today.
Okay.
And then it'll be at the committee's discretion.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is a housekeeping item, discussion of possible action regarding intergovernmental agreement for Memorial Waterfront Park Phase 3.
And,
correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is the part of the park that has to do with what you were discussing, where we're thinking about some additional plaything, right?
That's right.
Play areas or possible dog park or whatever, away from the memorial area of the park.
Correct.
Thank you.
Very simply, this is a good thing for us. South Carolina DOT has agreed to provide us the land, which is the land that will house the new additions to the waterfront park. This is away from the pier and the war memorial. It's the other side of Holman Boulevard.
Right.
And it's a parcel of land that was retained by DOT during the original project. So now what will happen is, if council is agreeable to this, that the town will be in control of all of the areas containing our park functions, with the exceptions, obviously, of the rights of way
right.
that DOT needs to maintain the bridge.
Do we need a motion to accept
this? I move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Item D.
Motion to approve.
All right. We have a motion to approve.
Second.
And a second. This has to do with just cleaning up the language of the new ordinance that preserves 2.5 minutes for public comment. This makes it across the board, town.
Yes, sir. There are no substantive changes here. These are upon review. It needs to be more clearly stated, and this corrects that lack of clarity.
Got it. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion is approved. Item number 7 is adjourned, so this committee stands adjourned. Thank you.